Buddhism's a science in certain ways. It's a philosophy which originally the word meant love of wisdom. Sophia is wisdom. And Buddhism's an art. Currently, I would say it's a way of life. But I would say all religions ought to be a way of life more than a belief system. Buddhism isn't so much a creedal religion. It's full of teachings. There is, on a cultural level, some expectations of behavior. Thailand is now within the capitalist web. And just like here, I would say capitalism is the dominant value system, not Christianity. Living Buddhist practice or living religious practice is marginalized everywhere.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience produced at a different location every week. I'm Bill Motlong from station WDRT in Viroqua, Wisconsin. Previously, we broadcast episode 1 of Charlie Knower's interview with former monk, Buddhist teacher, and translator Santi Caro. Today, we're broadcasting part 2 of our interview.
Thank you very much, everybody. Well, thank you very, very much. Vice President Vance, Speaker Johnson, Senator Thune, Chief Justice Roberts, Justices of the United States Supreme Court, President Clinton, President Bush, President Obama, President Biden, Vice President Harris, and my fellow citizens. The golden age of America begins right now.
On November 7th, 2024, one day after the presidential election, you wrote this on your Substack page. This election debacle feels like a recurrence of cancer. In that context, can you help explain a Buddhist perspective on how we got here, how we got to the current political, cultural place that we're in? And then secondly, the possibilities for making corrections or resolving that.
So this is something I've been pondering for years, and especially since November last year. One is the teaching of everything happens through causes, conditions, influences. And so to me, that's an important lens. How did we get here? Well, racism has always had a powerful place in white culture. That goes back 400 plus years. And part of the current regime is backlash against acknowledging racism. Now that, oh, we can't bring that up, that'll hurt people's feelings. Mm-hmm. People have been killed. And, oh, we don't want our tender young conservative children upset. But it's actually the adults who don't want to face these truths. So there's that mistreatment of immigrants who are allowed to come in or imported, especially from Central America. That's for the profits of American business, including big dairy farms in places like Wisconsin. These are things with a long history. Our worship of personal success measured in terms of profit in money, that goes way back. And the use of police forces to suppress labor unions, to beat up people of color. That's the history of big city police forces, Boston, New York, Chicago, Milwaukee, Portland. It's still alive in all these places. Derek Chauvin in Minneapolis wasn't the only bad apple. It's systemic. So those are just some primary examples. Throw in climate change and our profligate use of resources, especially fossil fuel. All these threads are coming together in a really toxic way, and it's bipartisan. So a thread I want to highlight, it's something I'm thinking about a lot now, is despite all those cultural currents and influences, cultural, social, political, economic, and religious, that are unwholesome, to use that term, unhealthy, and at core, anti-life. There was also a lot of decent, good Christians, people who formed farm communities throughout this huge country and took care of each other because it was either the community or the local church or in some places, synagogues or whatever. You had nothing until the New Deal. And what for a long time, and I think this is a Buddhist view, Ajahn Buddhadasa shared it, what held society together was the decency of a lot of ordinary people, which in this country centered on local churches for the most part, white churches, black churches, Hispanic, Catholic churches. That's changed now with Hindu temples, Buddhist places, and of course, the important role of Judaism and synagogues. What I fear has really deteriorated since the Reagan and Clinton years, and I put those two together as really representing a self-centered value system, both of them in different ways. I disagreed with Clinton less than I disagreed with Reagan. But that era, I think integrity started getting chucked out the window. And that's accelerated. Until now, we've elected a president with zero integrity, or close to it, and a regime of extremely low integrity, which brings me to the last part of your question, which is the way out of this horrible mess. And I'll focus on this country, but it applies Thailand, Israel, elsewhere.
It's global.
Is bringing back integrity.
How would you do that? It's easy to say, but I don't fully understand what to do here.
Well, in Buddhism, we always start with ourselves. And in the teachings, there are Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and other awakened beings that are often taken as exemplars, but there's another exemplar that I feel now is really important. Persons of integrity, persons of good culture. Any community where the leaders whether they're clergy, business people, school teachers, if they have integrity, if they uphold decent ethical values, if they treat others with kindness, and kindness is a important characteristic of integrity. With this exemplar, I'm speaking of the person of character and integrity. That's almost a joke in mainstream media. The word Buddha means awakened or awakened one. And that's one of many terms that point to the aspiration of Buddhism. So using the word Buddha, Buddhist, Buddhism, Buddhist teachings, to be a sincere practicing Buddhist is to put awakening more and more central to one's life. And in the Buddhist perspective, that's not different than living with less and less suffering. It's the same as living unselfishly, living with kindness, decency, honesty.
So how does this happen? How do we, as a country, we're narrowing this down to the United States, how do we develop that integrity?
That's too big for the likes of me. I don't have that level of influence, but at least a few people are listening. So we start where each of us does soul searching, which is core to spiritual life, whatever terms we use. Like I draw on Buddhist teachings to examine areas where, oh, my integrity could use some improving. So that's one, personal. And we all can see where we might want to do some personal inner work with our own honesty, integrity. Like even somebody like our president is lying all the time. I suspect he can't distinguish because the psychology of persons without integrity, that's another Buddhist term, asaparisa, someone without integrity, saparisa, a decent, honest person of good character. People who aren't honest can't track what's true and not true. And they're probably lying to themselves much of the time. So these things take inner work, and then our personal work extends to our behavior towards others, how we earn a living, our relationships. So that's my personal work, and meditation and other things support that. And then second, since we all live in relationship with others, do we have the courage to talk about this among ourselves? Or are we so worried about ruffling feathers that we allow TikTok, Twitter, X, whatever, Facebook, these brain-numbing social media, they've got their value, but overall, they're not contributing to ethics and decency. Are we able in our families, with friends, at town hall meetings, do we just talk about the budget? Do we find ways to raise issues of integrity and honesty? I don't mean the ones our congressperson avoids. I mean, I live in Ridgeville Township. our supervisors, I feel, have integrity. But that's not something we talk about publicly. It's not cool or it's shunned.
You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. We return now to Charlie Noer's interview with Buddhist teacher and translator, Santi Caro.
I'm a big fan of local government, and here in our small town, the past 4 years, I had certain things that I wanted to participate in on a city council level. And so I went to city council meetings, and I sometimes spoke, mainly listened. I became fascinated with how local government works. And there were and still are plenty of people with integrity at these meetings, both in the audience and at the tables. And that impresses me immensely and gives me hope that local government can work together. But we never talked about integrity. Nobody talked about integrity at those meetings, but that was present. The other thing that I see amongst friends and acquaintances, there's plenty of people talking about the problem, but it becomes an us versus them topic very quickly. What's your take on that?
Let me go back and say I agree with you that there's much more hope in finding and mutually supporting integrity locally. And it's unfortunate that our paradigm now for politics is the two-party capitalist system, which is run to benefit large corporations and rich investors and screws working people consistently, whichever side of the duopoly. As long as we're focused on that, it's pretty daunting. But I thank you for saying what you did, that locally there is integrity. The notion of mindfulness is helpful here. It's important to be mindful of such integrity. It's important to mention it and talk about it. Otherwise, it can be overlooked and not appreciated enough. Part of keeping healthy values alive is appreciating them in appropriate ways. And with large numbers of people not going to church together, we need other forums for that. It can be local theater, the music festival, as well as churches, meditation groups. But it's important to talk and appreciate what are the values that allow people to come together and work out the issues in a place like Viroqua.
How do you feel about the us versus them? That is fairly prevalent.
I'll look at that at two levels. First, having bought into that in elections, so we've boiled down democracy to elections. That's so simplistic, and it's allowed our democracy to be hijacked by money. And that's what, when America promotes democracy abroad, it promotes elections. I could give plenty of examples from Southeast Asia where elections may not mean democracy. And that could be happening here. So that's part of it. And when it's elections, we have a system that's structured maybe unintentionally, to be a two-party system. The founders didn't believe in parties, but they happened fairly soon. And so when our idea of democracy is there are two parties, that's your choice. So we've got this overall framing of we have to take sides. And we have these two political parties that are selling themselves for the sake of power, doing the bidding of people who fund them. And many of them are now millionaires. Yeah. So we have parties that serve wealth and seek power. That's not what democracy is primarily about. So this is one big root of the us and them. Throw in talk radio, throw in the Facebook algorithm, and the hijacking of attention. People just fall into now us versus them thinking because we're not inoculated against those things. To draw on Buddhist teachings, when there is clinging to self, to me, myself, there will be other. You can't have self without other. In the dualistic operating of our thinking. So at the root of us versus them is me. And we used to embed me in a rich web of relationships and community. Back, I don't know, maybe back in the 50s or sometime, you went to high school with people, you stayed in the area, you had to live with people. Mm-hmm. The modern lifestyle we've created now makes it seem you don't have to live with people. I'm leaving out many details, but our sense of us has gotten smaller and smaller. And that's been exploited to sell us stuff. They get us to identify with things. Sports teams, which we were talking about before this interview. Back before it became huge, big business and increasingly politicized, that might have been fairly harmless. But there are all these ways that we become tribal. And it comes back to the me, that to maintain my me, I need other, or our us needs them. This is a pernicious part of psychology. And traditionally, healthy religion has been a way to mitigate that tribalism, like we're all God's children. But then some took, we're all God's children, except for those unbelievers. I think only one of those is genuine. The other's a corruption. And Buddhists have their versions of this. Here, we're attacking immigrants. There was the Muslim ban. There's the very cynical use of bogus anti-Semitism to suppress free speech concerning Palestinians and so forth. My view, without a spiritual practice of some sort, and it doesn't have to be Buddhism, but something that grounds us in love, in compassion, in decency, in what AA calls doing the right thing, or this civil rights movement, which was largely Christian, they did not hate white people. That was white fear and propaganda. It's not historically true, except for a few. There's always a few. Religion or spiritual practice in some form, I see as the most important way to inoculate us from these toxic influences, which are financed by big money, whereas local stuff doesn't require big money. It's pitching in and helping each other.
What level of hope do you have?
Depends what sort of hope you're talking about. Especially since November, a lot of my students in my Buddhist circles have spoken about hopelessness. And in talking, it's mostly they have no hope that we're going to effectively deal with climate change. They have no hope that the chicanery of the current regime will be reined in. They feel a sense of hopelessness of women's rights being trampled on, of racial injustices increasing, and so forth. Much of that is about the future. I have lots of hope when my ego is not drawn into the perspective of worrying about the future. There is hope every moment in the ability of human consciousness to pay attention, to stop being seduced by our devices, etc., to stop swallowing the spin and just pay attention, like to the weather. At Kevala Retreat, the flowers are gorgeous right now, the birds. The three of us were talking about aging. We're still alive right now. Tomorrow? Trickier question. Mm-hmm. But right now, we're alive, we're breathing. This is where hope is. And the hope in the basic decency of ordinary people, if we stop following corrupt leaders.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to part two of Charlie Knower's interview with Buddhist teacher and translator Santi Caro. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase globally on Sprouts, contact Ursula Rudenberg at ursula@pacifica.org. This show was produced at WDRT in Viroqua, Wisconsin, by Charlie Knower and yours truly, Bill Motlong. Inspiration by Tamara Dean. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.